I have Kevin and Kelly Liu here, aka the Liu brothers, here on the Vietnamese podcast today. Thank you guys so much.
Oh, thank you.
We're going to do Mo Hai Ba Yo, yeah?
Yeah.
Mo Hai Ba Yo.
Get this out of the way. Oh, that's good.
Lychee Martini. Well, the three of us met a few years ago, and I've been trying to get you guys on the podcast forever.
We have, and I literally was just talking to Kelly about how long it took to sort of get this together and why it took so long. And I think for us, maybe it's a bit of that imposter syndrome, but I think we just felt like we were at a point 3 years ago. We didn't have anything like additive to the conversations you're having.
And you guys have mentioned that. And the funny thing is, like, I don't think I'll ever get rid of the imposter syndrome for me.
Yeah.
Right. I think it's a healthy thing to have. But the thing I wanted to tell you guys is this, and everybody else who's listening, that if I invite you on the podcast, I typically think that there's a calculus for me that these guys are going to blow up one day.
Mm.
And I wanted to catch them in those early years.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
We appreciate that.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Sure.
Thank you.
Yeah, because I, you know, sitting with you guys that one night, I could hear it. I could hear it. And you guys were, you know, out of my alma mater at USC. And I know how hard it is to get in there, you know. So let's take it back. How did you guys get to USC? And what got you guys into the film business?
Yeah.
So we always talk about our parents being the biggest inspiration. I think as Vietnamese immigrants, you can't help but talk about your parents and their journey, how they were an inspiration. But with our parents specifically, they did a great job keeping us in touch with our culture. And they did that by having us watch like Kim Hit movies growing up, like Vietnamese dub dramas. And we watched that when we were like 5 years old, 6 years old. And we were binging these VHS tapes that we would get from this this store in Chinatown, Boston. Yeah. And we were binging before binging was even a thing. We would just like cram through these tapes. And it really kind of opened us up to a world of storytelling that we wouldn't have been exposed to before. And we didn't know it actually influenced a lot of the type of stories we like to tell today. And these dramas were so heavy with like so much heart and just, you know, you really felt it when you were watching. We were crying at like 10 years old watching this stuff. And that is instilled itself in our films now, in our TV shows, in our scripts specifically. So, you know, we were watching all this stuff and we were 17 years old when we graduated high school. So we graduated kind of early and our parents were like, what do you guys want to do with your life? And being the youngest of the four kids, by this point, our parents had done an amazing job getting into like middle class. And we had the freedom to go explore, whereas our older brother and older sister wasn't able to. So yeah, so I told Kevin, I talked and I was like, Kevin, I think I want to go make movies.
So wait, this is your idea first?
Yeah.
I would say yeah. What
the hell is that there for
sure? Kevin, you want to tell him what you wanted to do after high school?
Like such a cliche. I'm going to take a year off. I don't know what I want to do. You know, maybe I'll travel, just something. I just didn't know what I wanted to do though. And I just didn't think filmmaking was an actual job, like a career that we can make something out of it. And yeah, I'll give credit where credit's due. Kelly was like, I want to be a filmmaker. I'm going to chase it. And I was like, yeah, I'm down. Let's do this. And I kind of just like invited myself. To the
party. Did you invite him?
No, it was like, I was like, you know, you can come with me because I was moving. I was moving to Dallas, Texas, out of all, because that's where you go to make movies.
Oh, really?
No. So, we said, no, it's outside.
You can make movies. You also say that. But I think for us, we were so naive to what was, you know, we had no connections in industry. We were like, we had family in Dallas, Texas who were like, come out here. We see people make movies, like kids. Cameras running around like the city all the time. I think they make movies out here, and so that's when we bought in. We're like, yeah, I think they do make movies out there, and they didn't, but that's okay. Like it wasn't like it's you can't replicate Hollywood, but it was just a different feel. But it was exactly what we needed.
So we didn't have a film school growing up. So like most filmmakers, I feel like they have the classic story. Oh, I was shooting movies with my friends and my neighborhood friends, and ever since I was a kid, my dad got a camera. Like our dad got a camera, but he used it to record like. Karaoke.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't us picking it up and shooting short films.
Yeah.
You know, but we talked about story all the time. Whenever Kevin and I told stories in high school, it sounded like a story. It was very long. Everyone was kind of like, why are the Liu brothers taking so long to tell this story? It's because we kept thinking like a movie. And so we knew that was ingrained in us. We didn't know the craft. So when I got accepted to this very small kind of art institute of Dallas in Dallas, Texas, I was like, Kevin, if you don't know what you want to do, you can just come with me. You know, I'm sure they'll accept you. Like, we pretty much will have the same application. And And fortunately, they said yes, because I honestly can't imagine doing this without him. I really value a partnership in this because it's such a lonely industry. So when we both moved out to Texas.
Yeah, I don't think we understood the value of that. You know, it's very, we commend a lot of people who make the move. Like a lot of transplants come to LA, but we commend a lot of people who came here on their own.
Yeah.
Because we had each other. And, you know, we went to Dallas first, went to school there, and that's where we were able to do all of the stuff that we didn't do when we were younger. We got to do all the crazy short films, everything to really hone our voice and experiment, try things, and figure out who we were as filmmakers, because we really didn't know. We just had this instinct to tell stories, and eventually we found ourselves to USC.
But before 17, you know, you're 13, 14, 15, and you're watching Kim Hip movies. Kim Hip movies, by the way, is sort of like Crouching Tiger and Dragon, that genre of all these manga, pre-manga books of Hong Kong, Vietnam, and they made it into, in Hong Kong would make all these like long series. I grew up with that too. That's how I learned Vietnamese. But when I was watching all that stuff with my brother and my dad growing up, binging it just like you guys, I was like dreaming of becoming a filmmaker, but didn't have the, like you guys, didn't have that permission, or nobody said you can do it.
Yeah.
But when did you guys actually have sort of like that first thought, like, it sounds like you had it.
I will say it was the moment when our parents asked us, what do you guys want to do after high school? I'm telling you, it was, I just said, yeah. I don't know, I kind of want to make movies. I love these shows. And my dad said, I'll never forget. He said, well, if you're going to do this, you got to give it 100%.
Wow.
Like, you really got to go for it.
Yeah, it's definitely really interesting, because I know there's the stereotype for a reason with like these Asian parents who work so hard to rebuild their lives, that they want their kids to choose something that has, you know, that is stable, yeah, less risky, and allows for a lot of impact too, like doctors, lawyers, things like that. For us though, like our parents were just wanted us to, you know, it's a privilege, but they were like, you guys should go do what you want to do. Like, we worked so hard to get here that whatever you guys want to do, I'll go chase it. Like, go try it. Why not? And even when we moved from home, we were the first one in our family to leave home.
Yeah.
Our mom went with us. She didn't move. She went with us. She moved with us for a couple of weeks. And I remember I was so scared. You know, it's like, we're 17, right?
17.
And I told my mom, I was so homesick. I said, Mom, I don't know if I want to stay. And she was like, just give it a week. Just stay for a week. And if it's still hard, stay a little bit longer. And then, you know, after a month, you know, you could still come home if you want to. It's okay. It's not permanent. So she was so like, she was
can you imagine?
She wasn't short term about it. She was really a lot of foresight. And yeah. So just so supportive. And we've always been very grateful. And honestly, that has become something that really stuck with us just throughout this whole journey of, you know, it's been over 10 years. Like, I'm not going to age us, but really? We've been chasing this for a long time and been invested in us a long time. And countless times in that journey when it was really dark, as in like really like seemingly hopeless, where it's like, oh, this is a really hard thing to break into. We do think about our parents and them telling us that thing where it's like, we worked really hard to get here. You guys should go after what you guys want to go after. Why not? Right.
Can you tell me when it got dark for you guys?
Oh yeah, definitely.
What are some of the biggest dark moments?
Yeah. For me, it was, you know, like, you come out to LA and like Kevin said, we leave home. You miss so many milestones. You miss so many things. Our dad, I still remember when our dad came out to LA and visited us, and he was like, we're in a kind of shitty apartment. I mean, it was just bad. It was just as compared to what we can get if we just stayed home. Like, our sister has a beautiful family, beautiful home. She worked hard for her. Our brother has a beautiful family and like a beautiful home and all these things and they got to have dinner together every night. My parents would cook for them. But then when our parents come and visit us, we're sitting in a small, maybe 2-bedroom apartment.
Mm-hmm.
People above us, people next to us making noises. It's like, he didn't see us seemingly okay. He felt like we were struggling and he didn't understand. We understood that part of this journey is the struggle. He was just hoping we didn't have to struggle like he struggled, or a version of his struggle, which is, you know, just trying to make rent,
yeah,
and whatnot. And we would do our best. We would not take their money because, you know, as parents, you kind of want to help. And being so far away, one of the ways they want to help is like, we'll pay for your rent. And we're like, no, we got to do this on our own. So yeah, I still remember when our dad sat with us and he said, I just thought you'd be home by now. And I think he thought,
yeah,
us leaving we would eventually do everything we want to do and come back. He didn't realize how long this journey was. And I just remember sitting there and saying to him, like, you guys sacrificed so much. And like our brother and our sister Lan and Tuan, they have beautiful family, beautiful home. Like that's their version of kind of not repaying you, but like honoring you with your sacrifices.
Yeah.
I was like, we want to do something different. Like we want to do something not necessarily bigger.
Yeah.
But like just do something different and like loud. And that to us was like making this movie and making it in this industry. And our mom was so funny, like on without a skipping a beat, she goes, then you guys be the best actors you can be. And we're like, we're not actors, but because she's so used to seeing us in the short road, you know. So yeah, so but that was a dark moment to have that hard conversation of like, yeah, we're not thriving, or you know, we're surviving. And I'm gonna
Hi, this is Kenneth Nguyen. A few years ago before I launched the Vietnamese podcast, my father and all of his siblings passed away. Their passing marked the loss of their stories and the connection to my grandparents and great-grandparents. This is partly what inspired me to start the work of the podcast. Many of you still have the opportunity to record and preserve the legacies of your own families. I've just begun to sit with a few families now for interview sessions to record the rich histories of their parents and the lives of the generations that preceded them. Don't let your family's stories go untold. Take a moment to reach out to me, and together, we will bring out your family's story on a recorded journey. I've included the link in the episode description. Visit VietnamStoryBank.com today for more information.
Just add to this, and I don't mean to be pessimistic, but I have seen, because I grew up here in Koreatown, I have seen quote-unquote guys that have made it, right? I'm talking like made it. And then dark times are right around the corner. But 2-3 years into the dark, they pick up a deal and it changes their life. Jeremy Renner was crashing out on one of these guys' couch and he wanted to give up. And I remember the story. Like, he's like, all right, I got this one last movie in me and I'm going to just go out to shoot it in the desert. I think it was Kurt Locker.
Yeah.
So he was going to quit, but he was like crashing the couch of like the guys that are friends of mine. And they're telling me like Jeremy Renner was going to quit, did the Hurt Locker, and then the rest is history, right? But then it's like, you know, I think life is like this continuum, right?
Yeah. And I think that's just, especially for what we're trying to do, which is be artists, a career, which is, again, Jack, you're talking about privileges, but it is a privilege to be storytellers, like for a living, right? To get paid to be artists. I don't think we understood that when we left home, like that's what it entails, but it's not for the majority. It's just not an easy like A to B.
Yes.
There's that whole journey. And I do think, as you know, part of being writer directors is understanding people's perspectives, like other people's perspectives, other people's lived in experiences. And I think all those struggles have shaped our voice, have shaped us, our attention to the human experience, I guess. And so it all applies to directing and storytelling anyways. So I will say, like, throughout all those dark times, you know, moments of imposter syndrome or moments where we feel like we're not good enough yet, or maybe we're doing the wrong things, like all these, like these things, that these voices in your head, it's like through all that, I do think we've grown from it, you know? And I think that's part of the journey for sure, especially for this industry. Yeah.
It's so tricky because there's no roadmap, right? I mean, is there a
roadmap?
I mean,
definitely
not about it.
There's some,
I think some people can have a roadmap, which is fine. But
I was just thinking about this on the drive over. I was like, man, you know, this is one of the industries where you really don't need to have any prerequisite to be, like, you can literally, someone can just get to wake up one morning, stay on the street and be like, I'm a director. And that's it. Like you are a director. That's it. Like, same thing with producer. You don't need to work. Some people do work their way up to that position. There's benefits to that. But in reality, like some people just come from that's why people change industries. And they're like, oh, I used to be, you know, a lawyer and now I'm a writer. It's like, whoa, you just jumped over. It's because there is no prerequisite for
it. The prerequisite is really your lived experiences.
Yeah.
What you're trying to say.
Yeah.
I think we all live life. We all have those experiences.
So when it's like that, I feel like it's a wild, wild west. Like anybody can get in. Mm-hmm. And there's something, you know, the good, the bad of that is it's hard to understand if what you're doing is right. You know, I'm using air quotes. But the other side of it is it's like well, what you're doing is not really wrong because there's no set way. There is no path, no real set path. And you just kind of keep going.
Before we get to why we're here in this beautiful building.
We've read all these books, by the way. We're intellectuals. We've read every one of these books. That's how we put it in there.
This drink is getting to me a little, maybe. I don't know. Things are even shit. Before we get to why we're here tonight, I want to know if you were to do it all over again the last 10 years, what would you guys do differently to break in or, you know, knowing what you know now, what would you do differently?
Probably a great plush. I would say, I think I would trust in our voice, Subin. Coming out of SC, we were so green. Some of our friends knew it instantly. I applaud them for that. They knew how to value their voice. And they knew somewhat of how the industry is played. They knew that at the end of the day, the writers are the ones that create. There's a rat race of like managers and agents, and those can all help and all, but the most important ingredient, it's you, is your creative voice. I think Kevin got caught up in the idea of like, whether it's representation or writing to hit a certain target, like, oh, the market, everyone loves.
Why are you throwing him under the bus?
No, it's both of us, right? Yeah, we did say out there, what's the car?
Oh, stole my mama. Did you hear that? Or, oh, it's, he's a Kevin, he whistled a knee underneath his breast.
Did he whisper? I said at me, the mic didn't pick it up. I said at me, but anyways,
what did they held up a ceiling
was that we didn't trust ourselves. And now, years later, after going through different reps and different managers, I feel like we have a much better sense of our voice, the type of stories we want to do. We're not trying to hit a target. We're not, you know, like for example, you know, there's certain type of movies everyone's watching at this time. Like, oh, this, who can write the next Quiet Place? It's like, well, whoever can write it, like,
there's writing
power to you, go write it. But like, that ain't us. We should just stick with, we should do what we feel like we would want to watch. And that will, you know, also be the thing that other people want to watch. It's like the most personal thing is the most relatable. That's so true.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like if we just knew that early on, we could have saved four or five years of
no more career.
Yeah, I really do believe that. But like Kem said, that lived experience of 4 or 5 years have informed us in a way where we could talk like this, where we were like, hey, we should really believe in our voice because we didn't 4 years ago, like for those, that time period. And that really took us on a detour in a sense. Yeah. So that's what I would say. Unless you do you have another
Three? I do think like those I call them side quests. Like they're valid for a reason.
Yeah.
And I think I credit my wife who told me this. I remember one time I was really just really upset. Like I felt like we weren't. This is probably like 3 years ago, 3-4 years ago. I was like, man, we're not really doing what we set ourselves out to do. We moved away from home all those years ago. We missed out on those milestones. Kelly said for a reason. We're not doing it for some reason. And this was during the IOTSI stories, which happened, what's probably
2021.
Yeah, so more than 3 years ago. But my wife is a film TV editor, and she had mentioned to me, like, she thinks that the reason why, maybe the reason why Kelly and I are in so much struggle right now is so that we really understand the struggle. So that when we get to a place where we, a place of leadership, a showrunner, you know, position or director, right, director, where we get to run the show, run the film, run the project, that we really look out for our team. And I thought that was really like, it made a lot of sense. It added a lot of perspective to our experiences so far. I was like, you know, I think that's right. I'm sitting here really upset and it's all valid. It was valid for me to be upset. But the other side of it is like, you know, it's a good feeling to hold on to remember, just like how our parents struggled to come here. It's like,
yeah,
we have to remember how hard this is so that we could take care of people. And I want to say, you know, if you ask anyone on our sets, on our films, that they do feel taken care of, you know, and times that they don't, that we hold ourselves accountable, that, but we really do try to look out for our people because we do think it takes, you know, we remember how much of a struggle it is to be a PA on a set,
yeah,
to be a grip, to be, you know, the sacrifices you made, even the department heads, everyone's making sacrifices to try to make these projects work out. So
yeah, you try to empathize. And I think that's part of our journey is that maybe it just took longer than normal in a sense, you know.
So, and we're still on that journey today, honest.
Yeah, we're still doing it. But we have a podcast out.
Yeah, we have a podcast episode. Yeah, I knew that.
We were checking that off.
And I think because you read all the books, and that's what allowed
true.
You to arrive.
Here. Our podcast listeners is over 1,000 books behind us that we read. So,
So the reason we're here tonight is because we are screening your latest, it's a short, it's a beautiful short that you guys invited me to Hollywood, a few weeks ago, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. But we're screening it here in Manhattan Beach tonight, or Hermosa Beach, or we're in the South Bay.
Yeah,
right. We're in Hermosa.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, I was listening to a podcast driving down with Quentin Tarantino and Gary, his writing partner. But they started out at the video store down here.
Oh wow!
Yeah, yeah.
Incredible.
So damn. Like it is, we're here.
Yeah,
we're here.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, small
L. So we're screening your short film here tonight. It is called The Technicians. And can you tell me how this film came about?
Yeah, of course. So, you know, going to USC, like Kevin mentioned, going from Texas to USC, USC grad schools, where we kind of found our voice. We were very much about finding the heart in our stories. So we're genre agnostic in a sense. We can do any genre we feel like, but the main thing that we feel like has to be there is the heart, the humanity. Like, what are we trying to say? So a couple years back, we were fortunate enough to get into the 1,000 Miles program, which was Sue Hughes' program. And through there, we came out with a really polished script. And then from there, we went and applied for Rising Voices. So Indeed sponsored with Hillman Grad, which is Lena Waithe's company. And you have to have a script that you submit. So we submitted our script that we wrote from 1,000 Miles. We felt like it was our best representation of our voice. And we also submitted a short film script. And they had a prompt, which is, what does the future of work mean to you?
Mm.
So we immediately thought about our mom being a nail technician. And we just thought about how nail industry for Vietnamese community, it's not just a job, it's a part of our identity, it's a part of our culture. If you don't know the history of it, I totally recommend looking it up. It's one of the most amazing things that happened right after the war. But this was basically Vietnamese people's gold rush. Like, this was the industry we kind of took upon ourselves and excelled at. So our mother was a part of that. We knew we wanted to tell a story about that. And then at the time, automation was a huge thing. This was a year and a half ago before it really blew up, but we kind of saw the tea leaves and we felt like, who is the person installing those self-checkout machines? Like, who is that? Because that's not a Silicon Valley programmer. That's just a normal dude. That's a normal person, a normal blue-collar worker. So we had this idea of these two workers who are different on the surface, but really, if you look at them, you're like, oh my God, they're much closer than you think.
Yeah.
So they're both technicians. And so we wanted to tell the story about these two people who cross paths and they just have a conversation. That was literally it. It was like, it's going to be a story on the surface that's about tech, that's about job loss. It's going to be about people losing pieces of their identity or whatnot. But at the core, it's really a story about two people talking, which is the biggest thing we feel like you're going to miss out on if you go through automation, if you go through self-checkout lanes, those small conversations and the small interactions. So yeah, that's what started it. And then we wrote the script. Kevin, you can take it from here. But yeah, we wrote the script.
Yeah, so we wrote the script. It was, I think it was like 10 pages at the time. But the meat of it was there. And exactly what Kelly said, the themes were there. And then fortunately enough, I think it was like 800 applicants or something. And they picked 10. So we were one of the 10. And I don't know, it was just one of the most remarkable experiences we've ever had. The hardest things we feel like with a feature film it's a short film, is getting funding for it and then getting the exposure afterwards. And Indeed, Hillman Grad, Real 2011 Films, who helps produce these films, they took care of that. They funded the film,
wow.
Right? It's like incredible. They fund the film and then they premiere in Tribeca. So we finished the film in April, I think, late April. And then we got to premiere in Tribeca in June. And it was probably one of the greatest nights of our life. It was one of the greatest. I wish I can bottle that night up and just show people who are filmmakers, who are in it, and be like, remember, this is the feeling why I feel like most of us chose this path. It was such an electric night. The audience was quite incredible. And the film played really well. Our dad got to be there. Our sister and niece and nephew got to be there. And yeah, it was, we had a speech that, cause they had everyone, all the filmmakers, do an introductory speech before your film. So we got to walk out on stage and see like 500 plus people. And we told a story about our parents and being refugees and told this really long tale of how he went from a refugee in Vietnam during the war to now sitting in this seat. And then it hit us. Kevin said something like, actually, our dad is right here. And he stands up. And the crowd damn near gives him a standing ovation or he loses.
This was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. And I think I said something like, as you can tell, it's they've come a long way since then, and we're examples of that. And I think that really hit home for a lot of people of how important these programs are to uplift voices that are, like, you know, that are people of color, just people who don't have connections in industry, like us. So yeah, I think it was just such a beautiful night, and all the other nine films were absolutely incredible, and Technicians itself played really well. And I think Kelly tapped on it a bit when he said how the film is really about two people talking about connection. And I'll tell you what, Kenneth, when the film's over, people came up to us afterwards and they were like, I didn't know I needed to see this film.
Yeah.
And it just, I don't know, it was kind of like bittersweet. I was happy that we were able to connect with them on this level, but it just really pointed out how people want that, those meaningful conversations with others, and how important human connection really is, and how much, like, people value that.
Well, I'll tell you what's crazy about this piece that you guys did is, not only are you checking off the box of that cultural story piece for us, for Vietnamese people, but it sort of like begins to ask the questions that we're starting to wonder once we start losing connections with each other, you know, in the future. And it's a general sort of, it's a beginning to conversation.
Yeah.
But springboarding from our Vietnamese culture, the nail industry culture, is this going to be a feature anytime soon?
Yeah, we're thinking about it. You know, people have asked us. I think the world is probably what the feature is going to be.
Yeah,
it's going to have some similar characters. I think for the feature to exist, it would be a little bit outside of the salon, but we were interested in the idea of having a character.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
After, like, our nail technician, Tippies, who we named her, and a automation technician can be the main characters, but it's just really about the world itself.
So you, yeah. I mean, who, Tippy?
So Tippy is our main character, is the nail technician.
The nail.
Yeah, played by Kathy Bui.
Okay.
And our automation technician's name is David, and he's played by Jay Alphonse Cableson.
Okay. Yeah. And Tippy is an homage?
Yeah.
Is that, okay, can you guys explain that?
Oh, of course, yeah. So the history that I think definitely listeners and viewers should look up is when the Vietnam War was happening, and then you had the Boat People of Vietnam. Tippi Hedren is a very famous actress. She's played in The Birds, Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds. She's also an activist, and she felt like she had to help somehow. And one of the ways she did it was Camp Hope Village. I can't remember off the top of my head right now, but that's where they were housing a lot of the refugees from Vietnam. And she came in with her seamstress and I believe her hairstylist. And her whole mission was to show the Vietnamese women that here in America, you can make a living for yourself, and you can be the breadwinner. You could be the person that makes the money for the home and have, you know, some sense of purpose.
Yeah.
And although the Vietnamese women in this village or in this camp wasn't really interested in the hair or the other stuff, the seamstress, they loved her nails. And Tippy was the one that said, oh, well, you could do this. And she brought her nail technician in. And she taught these women, you can look it up online, there's a beautiful graduation photo of, I believe, 15 different Vietnamese women who all graduated with their nail license. And what's crazy is, I believe this is true, over 50% of the nail salons in America are Vietnamese run or owned. And you can somehow, like 5 degrees of Kevin Bacon, connect it back to one of the women who came from that village. So it just really showed how Tippy was kind of the... Weirdly, I don't want to say tipping point. It sounds so corny. I already said it, so I'm just going to say it. Lean into it. The tipping point of having this, the Vietnamese people. I'm a dad.
Like, Brian, you said Vietnamese.
I already said it. Just use it. It's going to pay off later. But yeah, so the idea is that she really introduced this industry to the Vietnamese people, and we accepted it and excelled at it.
Mm.
You know, and I not a lot of people know that history. So
I think the number is actually higher than 50%.
You're probably
right. I think Judah might be a little higher, but beautiful story. Tippi Hedren, mother of Melanie Griffith.
Yeah.
And grandmother of Dakota Johnson, right?
Yeah. It's Hollywood legends there. So
yeah,
it's just amazing when you see how, and this speaks a little bit to the theme of connection, of human connection that we were trying to do with our short. She didn't have to do that.
Right.
She did not have to go out there, put herself out there, try to help these women. But she felt it was important enough to her that these women had some sense of hope. And she brought it. And that, I mean, she changed generations of lives, you know,
from millions of lives.
Yes. Millions.
We pay homage. We want to honor that a bit in this short. And we have this moment where Tippi is talking to David in just casual conversation, but just talking about sort of how she got into nail tech, being a nail tech, and how her grandmother went to one of the, you know, was one of the women at that camp or something, or, you know, part of
that village.
Some connection to it. And so we were trying to pay homage to that. We named her Tippi. Our costume designer,
Tim No. She, for those like eagle-eyed viewers, right? Yeah. She had a Tippi wear earrings that had birds on it. So like for anyone looking, they're like, oh, wait, that's the bird. Just look for the close-ups. Look at the ear.
Sure. Shout out to Kim No. Yeah. She'll be on the podcast soon.
Oh, well, yeah.
She's a highly decorated costume designer.
Yeah.
She's actually working on the next project with me. I'm producing something for Lawrence Lay.
Oh, okay. There we go. She's
She's doing good hands.
Yeah, great hands. She's phenomenal.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, okay. She was supposed to come on the podcast like a few weeks ago, and then she got really busy with production. And
oh, she's always busy.
She's always so busy. Yeah, it's good. That makes perfect sense. We, however, are very free. it makes perfect sense. I don't know what to believe anymore, Ren. We aren't
going to believe all of it. But take all of it.
We are here
to
screen technicians tonight. How much community has seen this? How much of our Vietnamese community has seen this?
We actually got it. So one of the things we were really looking forward to after we made this film was to submit it to the Viet Film Fest.
Yeah, I already know the answers, by the way.
I know that you were there. Yeah, you're totally there. I'm hearing. I'm like, wow, Kent is really setting us up very well. Yeah, across 6 minutes. I will say, so a few years back, I don't know if you know this story. A few years back, Jess Vu, who is an amazing person, Vietnamese, an entertainment person. I don't even know how to categorize her. I just call her the
producer,
the Nick Fury of the Vietnamese
Fury. Yeah,
she just assembled
the Fury together. Absolutely.
And she has the best lines, and she just, you know, but yeah, when we first met her, she said, hey, I really want to like really get the Vietnamese and entertainment community together. And she had a mixer. And I remember going to that mixer, and it was at a bar. It was very small. It was not like, now it's like, we're all really into
so hundreds of them.
Yeah, both there. Yeah. So this was and I just remember being there, and I remember leaving with this feeling of like, I don't know how we can help. Like, it was like a weird imposter syndrome, but also like, how can we help? Like, how can we make ourselves, put ourselves in a position where we can provide something, like Kevin says, add to the conversation. So after that, we made a couple shorts or whatnot, but we had our eye on the Viet Film Fest. And when we made the short, we were so excited to submit this festival. We really wanted to get in. Like, I would say like neck and neck with like a Sundance, you know, like you just want to get in there. And part of it was because we felt like we finally had something to add to our community. And so when we got in, it was one of the happiest days. Like, we were so excited.
Hear that, Issa?
Yeah. Issa. Yeah. You made our year, made our, you know,
you guys, the founder of the Viet Film Festivals.
Yeah.
Just, I don't want to do inside baseball, but yeah.
No, it's like, you know, it's good to recognize it.
Yeah. It's totally worth it. Yeah. We should recognize.
Yeah. We recognize these people.
Yeah. And because they're laying a path near us, right? When no one else wanted.
Yeah.
So they took the time and to gather the resources to make the Viet Film Fest feel like, I mean, you felt like you were at the Oscars or so. I mean, even the way they announced the nominations, like we got thoughtful emails of saying, hey, you made it to the festival. Here's what's going to happen. Like, really specific emails for us that I feel like someone sat down and took their time to write. It wasn't a blanket thing, you know? So it just showed how much they cared. So when we got in, we were very fortunate to be nominated Best Short, but also our lead actor or co-lead, J. Alphonse Nicholson, got nominated Best Actor. Then we show up to awards night. Of course, we called our parents. We said, if you're going to come to any festival,
I'm here.
This is the one you show up to. We're going to wear our ao yais, which are like traditional Vietnamese outfits. And the films are in Vietnamese. Like, you're going to have a good time. So our parents got to fly out from Massachusetts Yeah, and we were there at awards night, and we won first best actor, which is J. Alphonse Nicholson, absolutely amazing actor.
And just to highlight that real quick, J. Alphonse Nicholson is not Vietnamese. He's black.
Yeah.
And he is, we found out after he won the award for best actor that he is, although the festival has been around for 20 years and non-Vietnamese actors have always been in consideration, he is the very first one to win the award who's not Vietnamese. Isn't that incredible? We're just so proud of that. And Alphonse, just speak on him for a second. He is a phenomenal actor, well established in our eyes for sure. He's on P-Valley, and so he's a busy man. Like literally, when we called him about this project, he was doing a show in Atlanta.
It was in New York.
Yes,
a play.
So he was busy, and he's like, "I love the script. To his credit, he's like, "I've never worked with a Vietnamese actor. And I want to. I'm really sad to say that. And I really want to. And I love the script. I know this character. I'll be in town for about 4 or 5 days. Can we make this work?" And we're like, "Let's do it." And to go from that conversation back in January, February to awards night, which was like
August later, yeah, 10 months.
And he wins the award for best actor. It was
from our community,
It was so almost to say like we see you, and I don't know, it's just something so beautiful about that.
Yeah.
That was, Alphonse was so elated, and we are just so proud of the moment and proud of him and proud of the film.
Yeah, and then of course after that, we had to get to the nomination for Best Short, and I didn't think we were going to win it, and we ended up winning that one as well. So it was just such a beautiful night, and it was great that our parents were there, because I think these little moments, although like winning the short, it doesn't mean like you win $1 million. It's not about that. And it's something we say to Stephen King, said this in his writing book, which is these moments where it's a validation for your ambition. And those are so, we didn't realize how important that was. We did not realize that. Looking back, we can see these little moments that kept us going with these moments of validation for our ambition, whether it be a friend saying, "Hey, I really believe in you guys. You should keep going." Or a mentor saying, "You guys should really believe in yourself or believe in your voice."
Or someone inviting us onto their...
Well, I was just going to say, you got to stole it right in my mouth. But yeah. These guys are validation for my ambition. Yeah. What's up?
Stop.
You know, no, but two can play this game.
Yeah. Three can play the main break. I think it's so important to say, like, yes, it'd be great. And Kevin and I are, we're making ends meet, as most people are in this age, especially in this industry. But I think those moments of validation for your ambitions are so important, and it's so important to recognize. So to be on that stage and look out at a sea of people who look like us, who are our community, and we made a very specific sort of Vietnamese film, and to be recognized saying, "Hey, thank you for adding something to the conversation," it just meant the world to us. And that was a moment of like, Kevin, we're on the right path. Like the validation for your ambition, it's not about monetary, it's about recognizing that, hey, you guys did the right thing, or you're doing the right.
It's connecting. It's resonating, which is very important.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So one thing I really want to know, and I always wanted to know between the two of you, is like, all right, so when you said showrunner earlier, I'm like, what if like a studio comes to you guys and you're like, all right, we're going to give you the keys to the car. Who's the showrunner? How do you do that? Between the two of you, like if you guys both came up with an idea, if you guys both worked on something, do you guys often have to pick, you wear the hat and I'll wear this hat? Like, how does that work?
Oh, that's a great question. Yeah. I'll say it kind of happens naturally. I will say, first off, if that were to happen, Kelly's gone. He's out of here. I'm fucked up. He's out. Cut him out of the... Yeah. Cut him out of the building.
I'm a Luigi here.
Yeah. Definitely not.
Right.
Sorry,
you're too.
Yeah, too.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, no, it's fine.
But you're one full drink in. I think you... It's, yeah.
Okay, you're good.
But I think for us, it's like we had been fortunate. And again, we didn't know this when we did it. We chose an industry that is so reliant on collaboration. That the... For us anyways, our best ideas have come from me and Kelly just sitting down. One person starts off the conversation with the concept. And next thing you know, it's like, it filters through me and then Kelly. And next thing you know, by the time we end up with what we have, I don't even remember where it began. Like, yeah. who came up with what? And it just melds itself. And then, of course, we have the partner heads. Everyone's filling in and adding their experiences to make it a fully lived thing. So yeah. I do think we chose an industry where collaboration is...
But, I mean, who gets to direct you know, technicians, who gets to produce, has to produce.
Yeah, I think also, you know, for technicians specifically, it was a three-day shoot. We have a producer, we had a producer on board, so I was really, Christy Chu, she's amazing, amazing producer. And yeah, so basically for directing, there we do a lot of homework beforehand because we want to make sure we show up on the day in sync. But at the same time, we have freedom. If some of us, one of us is feeling like one way or the other, how we want the scene to go, we just trust. But we also, in the moment, if I'm having a rough time, I look at Kevin, I go, dude, I am not really connected with the scene. And that's the beauty of having a director.
A twin brother.
Yeah, co-director to be like, I got
you. Connecting with the scene may be too hard. It's more like, you know, there's so much problem solving that occurs on a set because of just whatever the mechanism of everything. Like, all of a sudden, you know, someone shows up 5 minutes late, trickles in, next thing you know, you're an hour behind. Like, it really, that's like the magic of filmmaking. It's just problem solving on the, in the moment. And I like to say there are times when Kelly and I can problem solve much faster because one of us is like, oh, I know what to do in this moment. It, like, they're just locked in. You know, people talk about the flow state with athletes. I feel like there is a creative flow state, right? And there are times on technicians where one of us got into the flow state much faster than the other. And because we both have done so much homework that we know what the destination is, we agree on the destination,
there's no like friction?
Not,
I would say so when it comes to production, there's no friction.
Yeah,
because by then it's like we already kind of agreed. It's all about the homework beforehand. That's where if there's any like debates or heated conversations,
then make it out early.
Yeah, it's like we got it because there's no way we can't. We've done it before. Like that time when we were in our undergrad, when we were just learning the ropes, we did bring it to the set and we didn't like the way it felt. You know, where you're like two people are trying to figure it out there in the moment. It doesn't make any sense. So we do, because of those experiences, now we're like, okay, let's figure it out beforehand. And we got to figure this out now. So whether it be the script stage or the shot list stage, we kind of have, we get it all out there now. And that's the beauty of having two people. It's like, once you go through it like that, it's kind of like it already went through a filter.
Yeah.
So we're not really questioning it. You know, for technicians specifically, we had this chase scene, as you know, we only had 1 hour to shoot that.
Wow.
The whole thing, because of the way the timing worked out. We had this, and we wanted to be safe. We wanted to make sure, because it involved the car and the person running in front of the car and the person driving the car, and the timing had to be right. So one of us was like, okay, we won't be able to shoot this traditionally where we have cutaways and all that stuff. What if we just stuck with our main character? Because he's our lens through this world. And that's our best shot. And Jay Alphonse is amazing. So he will tell the story through his face, his looks, and his acting. You know, so that was a quick thing on the set. We knew it was like, that's it. That's what we have to do. And we got the shot.
It was
kind of did a wonder running out of the salon into the street or into the parking lot. And there's this whole chase scene, but we're on Alphonse the entire way. And credit to our cinematographer, Jackie Bao, for executing that.
LA's so in her team, on the May team, just like a steady cam operator, just everyone just like kind of understood the assignment. Like, okay, we are following him. We have 1 hour, we can do this. And we did it. And, you know, we're happy with it. It definitely is
we're proud of it.
Yeah, we're proud of it, for sure. You know, the next few years is tough. I'm seeing it all over. I'm seeing blood everywhere. My brother's in the business. You know, we've all been around this for like 30 years. This is so tough. Mm-hmm. What's your plans for the next few years? What you guys have on the plate?
So we're very fortunate that. I totally understand the key word plan. Like, we have a plan because we recently got into the Ryback Rise program.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you so much. That is 1 year of our life. So at least we know in
1 year you got something covered.
We've gotten something. We have a goal. And when you don't have a goal and self-motivated, it's a lot harder. With two people, it's a little tighter, easier because one person is like, hey, I think we should be doing this. Like, you have someone you're working together with. And I don't want Kevin to fail, so I'm going to do my best and pull my weight. But for us specifically, like, we were talking about how gratitude, Kevin always talked about gratitude being something we just have to focus on because we're very fortunate.
Yeah.
You know, we worked really hard for it, no doubt. But getting into the 1,000 Miles program got us that script that we wrote. That script got us into the Rising Voices program. The Rising Voices program got us the short film that got into Tribeca. That qualification of getting a short into a major film festival is why we qualified to apply for Rise. And when we applied for Rise, we met some amazing people. Our friend Omar is amazing, and we met him in Rising Voices, and he's a Ryback Rise alum.
he put in a good word for us. And he was like, guys, you should apply for Rise. I said, man, we don't meet any of the work visits. She goes, dude, your film's going to Tribeca. And I just, like, it was like a deer in headlights moment. I just said, oh my God, you're totally right. So we did the work and you met the requirements. And we were very fortunate. We did our interview. We pitched our stories. And we're one of 14 filmmakers who were selected this year. So we're running a feature through them. We're going to learn so much about ourselves and about our writing through them. In October, we're going to pitch it. So it's like, we've got the plan. We've got this roadmap.
A bare minimum.
Bare minimum, yes. But what it does, it gives us something to look forward to. And in the meantime, we can do these little side quests, like Kevin says. We can go off and do, hey, we want to write another feature. Let's write that feature. We want to write a short story. Let's write that short story. We're going to write a TV show. We can write that TV show. But that all amounts to, in October, we will have a feature that if we do our job, and do our best on it, it should be something people, when we pitch it, will want to be a part of. So we're very fortunate to have that. I don't know if we've got anything else to add to that.
I want to just add that we also are hustling in just trying to survive. I think that's the biggest thing, is like to not, sugarcoat it or minimize how difficult it's been the last few years. Like, we are doing everything we can to like, against me, you know, when we were at our undergrad, although that wasn't a proper film school, whatever that means, it's like we were able to pick up a lot of skills like editing, just that. So we pick up gigs every so often to help us get by, and that's just being real with the
acting. Yeah, I can share that. I empathize because I'm the same way.
Yeah.
I pick up editing gigs. I pick up, you know, interviewing gigs, and anything that can keep the lights on, because we're artists and there are boom and bust cycles that we all go through, but we're all going through it.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy, especially, and I know, fortunate to be, and we have representation who's looking out for us and trying to get us in the rooms that we're writing, that we're doing everything we can to give them the tools.
Yeah.
You know, we just did a pitch for a TV show, I think last week.
Yeah.
And so we're out there, we're trying to push our stuff. Simultaneously, we are doing what we can to survive and make ends meet and live a life, you know?
Yeah, we're both married. Kelly's a dad. It's we have responsibilities.
That's where all the dad jokes come from.
You know, I do know, I do know.
Can't help but say it.
And I know a lot of the guys that are in their 20th year, 25th year are going through the same thing. I just don't think it ever goes away, to be honest with you. Even the guys with the big houses, they are like struggling to support that.
Yeah.
You know? And so at every level, you're just going to like encounter this like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, kind of have to just, it's the grind. You kind of have to just love the grind.
Yeah.
In a way. And I will say we love the grind, man. Like, it's an amazing, you make something as you know, cinema to us is the not purest form of art, but that is the easily most accessible. You sit down, you watch some movie, and next thing you know, you come out thinking, oh my God, I learned about parenthood out of this movie. You know, you watch, like, one of our favorite movies of all time is The Host by Bong Joon-ho. And to us, that's a film about family, about dysfunctional family, and how you always have to be there for each other regardless. And we learned that from watching a monster movie.
And so it's really,
yeah. And it gets you in a way, you know, and we've always been empathetic people, but now that we've really ingrained ourselves in the films, it makes us want to connect with people more in real life. You know, people like yourself, you know, we see you and we're like, man, what a lonely looking guy. What's up here? I'm just joking. But, you know, we want to know your story, you know, and you've been amazing, such an amazing supporter of ours
for the last X amount of years that we've known, you know, so. Well, that's the other side. I think it's like, you know, we're talking about our plan and all that. I think part of the plan is really just taking care of these relationships. Kelly and I, although we're not alonists, we have each other, but there are times when we're living in the same echo chamber and we do need people outside of us. We have our partners who are really, really helpful in that. But just, you know, investing in, part of the plan is investing and valuing the relationships we have, and not in a ulterior motive kind of way, but just not being so caught up in the rat race that we forget about the people around us, because honestly, like, that helps us get through those dark times.
Yes, too.
Yeah. It's like these conversations, just sitting down and talking to our friend and remembering like the life outside the industry, you know. So that's part of the plan as well.
Awesome. I'm gonna end with one question. What does it mean to be Vietnamese to each of you?
Oh my gosh, I'm, you know, it's one of those things. I'm gonna try not to choke up when I think about it, but it is, you know, I now that I'm a father, I see my daughter and I'm like, man, I can't wait to tell her about the long sense, long culture she has, this long history that she comes from. That's like actually like a part of her identity. Oh, man. So, yeah. So I just, man, I choke up when I think about my daughter. But it's hard not to think about the sacrifices that our parents have gone through, that our family have gone through, and just how fortunate we are to have this opportunity. And that's something like, so what does it mean? It means having a sense of history and a sense of identity that I think is very rare for some people. And it's something I think like the legacy of it, to be able to pass it on to my daughter and have her have a moment where she could meet you. Like, that's going to be amazing when she meets you. And she's like, you cannot, you know, like having that language that she will understand and have a sense of. Anyways, it just, to me, it's like legacy, it's history. It's something we should all be really proud of. Yeah.
Very cool. I love it.
I would say a little bit, it sort of touches on that a bit, but I actually been thinking about this a lot. A version of, I keep saying, I'm like, I was driving here, but I have been thinking about this. I do think that we're people that have persevered through so much. And I firmly believe that we inherit, you know, that's generational trauma. So we inherit those things that our parents have gone through, but we also inherit the good things too. And like our parents' perseverance exists in us.
Yeah.
I really believe that, because sometimes I wonder, like, why would we choose such a crazy industry? And this isn't, we're not doing brain surgery. I'm not comparing it to that at all. But those dark times, those moments where it's like, wow, there is an easier way to live,
yeah,
Frank, you know, than to do this. But yet we're here for a reason.
And somewhere in the epigenetics give us that tenacity.
I think so. And this is based on zero science and zero, you know. But in my mind is like, you know, in theory, if we were able to inherit the generational trauma, then I feel like we're able to inherit the generational perseverance too. So I think a lot about that. I think about the displaced Vietnamese people, how we've been able to rebuild our lives in those moments. And it's like, we have it in us. And it's just about tapping into recognizing it, feeling empowered by it.
Yeah.
So I would say there's a lot of empowerment when I hear that word.
Well, we are going to pick up this conversation in a few years or a few months from now. When the next thing comes out for you both, we're going to... The excitement and energy is building up downstairs. There's at least 50, 60 people down there waiting to see you guys. I'm not going to hold you guys longer, but thank you so much for agreeing to come on to the podcast. It really is an honor and a privilege for me. It really is.
Thank you for the conversation. It was beautiful. Thank you.
Cheers.
Thank you, Kenneth.
Thank you for listening to The Vietnamese with Kenneth Nguyen. Special thanks to Brittany Tran, to Jane Nguyen, Catherine Nguyen, Tina Pham, Sydney Jamie, and Christo Trinh. Please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at The Vietnamese Podcast.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at tanger.com.